This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. You're still listening to Power Talk with me, Aldrin Simpier. So next we focus on the president's economic recovery plan. But quite specifically for me, the Economic Recovery Council that will be set up. So we'll be in conversation with Zwelinzima Mavavi, Secretary General of SAFTU. Good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning to you, Adrian, and I'm General Secretary, not Secretary General.
Oh, sorry. Apologies, General Secretary.
All right.
Mr. Mzwanele Manye also joining us. He is the Head of Policy and Strategy at ATM. Good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Morning, Adrian and fellow panelists, and good morning to all your listeners.
Duma Qubule, who is economist and founder for the Center for Economic Development and Transformation, also joining us. Good morning and welcome to you, Duma.
Hi, Adrian. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much. So I'm going to start off this conversation by playing this clip from the president's speech, which he delivered during the joint sitting of parliament. And as I was saying during the open line, it is the portion for me that is not in the president's text speech, but what he said off the cuff that has made this story for me so interesting. And just focusing on the Economic Council, on this Economic Recovery Council, because of our experiences of the National Coronavirus Command Council. So I'm going to play the clip quickly, and I'd love to hear your opening remarks, just listening to what the president said and how you understand the Economic Council to be or what it would be. It is 8 minutes after 10 o'clock, and just an indication as well that we have invited the presidency. They said there's no one available to join us to explain exactly how this Economic Council will be working. We've also invited NEDLAC, and NEDLAC has made it clear that this is a government structure, so they will not be speaking on it. So let's play the clip quickly, and then we'll get the opening remarks.
To fast-track the delivery of economic reforms, Operation Vulindlela will be implemented as a joint initiative of the Presidency and the National Treasury, reporting directly to the President on a regular basis. It will work closely with the Cabinet's economic cluster to ensure that the priority interventions and key enabling reforms are implemented rapidly and continuously, as well as effectively, and that those responsible for their implementation will be held accountable. A National Economic Recovery Council comprising of relevant members of Cabinet will provide political oversight and enable rapid decision making. As we now continue to manage the coronavirus down, a National Council for Economic Recovery will now come into its own to enable all the various tasks and interventions that we have identified to be properly implemented. The Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation remains the backbone of government reporting on the 5-year medium-term strategic framework.
Okay, so there it is. Duma, let's start off with you. From what you've heard the president say, and especially the part as well where he starts speaking about the Coronavirus Command Council and how this Economic Recovery Council would then be ready to now act. Your take on that and your understanding of this council?
You know, Aldrin, we've had a proliferation of these celebrity councils, and I think South Africans have had enough of them. I've lost count of the number of celebrity councils we have to advise the president on the issue of Eskom. They've put forward so many recommendations around what should be done to change Eskom's finances, for example, and the government still hasn't made a decision on it. I think we shouldn't be focusing on the composition of these councils. I think they're very irrelevant. And we've also got one called the Presidential Economic Advisory Council. And we saw last week which side of the fence it is on. It came out in support of the cancellation, the stopping of the grants that were that have been given to millions of South Africans to address humanitarian relief to millions of South Africans. Mm-hmm. And they also came out in support of cuts to the public sector wage bill. So I think this neoliberal presidential advisory council is not helping the situation. It is worsening it. And just one last thing I want to say about the recovery plan. I'm glad you called me after a few days after this, because I've had a time to look at it properly.
I saw your tweet.
Yeah, it's different from the comments I made immediately to the media. Mm. And the first thing I've seen, now that I've had the weekend to look at this plan, I can honestly tell power listeners that in economic terms, not any other terms, the president said nothing. He didn't. What he said does not add a cent to the wholly inadequate response we've had as a country to this once-in-a-century pandemic. Yeah. So I look at just the economic numbers, and I've looked at all the numbers back to front, and I can assure listeners of power that there's not a cent that has been allocated additional to what we already know.
Okay. Mr. Vavi?
I agree with that, Duma, wholeheartedly. Look at the numbers of the committees we have in ESCOM. Look at the advisory committees that we have in the presidency. And look at all of these committees they are putting in place to address to specific charges. And at the end of it all, don't be confused about the flowery language. The president, we can give him one thing, the presentation skills. No one matches him. All of the current or previous presidents cannot ever even do what he does. I mean, he's absolutely an excellent presenter. Mm-hmm. But look at the detail. Don't be confused about the flowery language. Look at the detail. But more importantly, address. Look at who will benefit at the end. Look at what have happened since he had taken over, to jobs, to inequalities, to poverty. Look at the 26 years of democracy, and you will come to one conclusion, that the rich have become much more richer and the poor have become much more poorer. So to us, no committee, look at what are the end results, what mm-hmm. will happen to the poor and what will happen to the rich. Bottom line to us, that's a debate.
Okay. Mr. Manye?
Yeah. Firstly, I agree with the fellow panelists. And I must say that I think, indeed, the country is in a serious crisis. I think President Ramaphosa missed a golden opportunity to press a reset button. Instead, he rehashed his 2018 February Sona speech. I think it's a waste of time to deliberate too much about what he said, because, indeed, like Duma is saying, he didn't say anything. I think what the president should have said are five things. One, in order to get to the next level, because the country is really slipping, there are five things the president should have said. First thing he should have said is that in order to get the state-owned enterprises to be able to respond to the dynamic needs of the economy, he must unshackle them from the laws that are actually constraining them. So all SOEs Schedule 2 should be exempted from PFMA, and triple PFA. That will give them the necessary agility and necessary nimbleness to be able to respond. It will also, the issue of triple PFA, ensure that a lot more black people are also involved in the economic mainstream of the country. Secondly, President should have said that the corporates of South Africa have been pretty much on tax holiday, that the corporate tax should increase at least to about 30% or so, in order to build up the reserves. And also, we should have said that the individual tax will come down to the highest ceiling of about 35%. That would have put a lot more spending capability on the hands of individuals. And lastly, on the tax, it should also have put a wealth tax, a once-off even, just to give the economy a kicker. Thirdly, you should have spoken about decolonizing the economy. It cannot be that you continue to be talking about inclusive growth. Inclusive into what? Inclusive into the neoliberalism that we're currently suffering. We need to decolonize this economy. South Africa must stand on its own. It must not be a place where you come and pick up raw material. We must beneficiate our own minerals, and We must make sure that we own our land so that our balance sheet looks good. Fourthly, Eskom must build its own renewable energy. It cannot be that we have an Eskom which the country depends on for electricity, but Eskom is now depending on all kinds of IPPs instead of building its own renewable energy plant. And also, there should have been a very clear position to say that Eskom will renegotiate its contract with the IPPs and also with the cost-plus mines that are busy milking Eskom. Lastly, President should have said, indeed, the South African Reserve Bank is doing well in terms of reducing rates, but there should be a little bit more reliance as well on South African Reserve Bank to do a bit of quantitative easing in order to make sure that the country must not depend on printed money elsewhere when we can print our own.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the five things that should have been said. And if it's done that, there would be a very clear break from the morass that the country is facing.
Okay. So, Duma, you said earlier on that we shouldn't pay any attention to the composition of this Economic Recovery Council. Why do you say that when, for instance, we see...
No, carry on. Yeah.
Okay. No, I was saying that when we look at, for instance, the National Coronavirus Command Council and how it has behaved and how it has informed, not really policy position, but how government responds to COVID-19, which has also had an impact on the economy. So why shouldn't we worry about the composition of this council?
Okay, so we have something similar. It's called the Presidential Economic Advisory Council.
Yeah.
And the whole weekend I read the report. And the report is, it's like, I don't know, I don't agree with a word on this report. Everything in it is wrong. They say we don't have fiscal space. They say we can't spend on infrastructure. They say we can't spend on grants. There's a long list of what they say we can't do. And I think this council is the problem that we're having as a country. It's giving the president the wrong advice, which resulted in this. He had back-to-back meetings with the ANC, the Cabinet Lakota, and the council on Friday before he announced it. And so this advisory council, I believe, is giving the wrong advice as to what we should do as a country. So I'm just saying that these handpicked. I don't think they're helping anything because let me give you. I've looked at all these councils. They never release their reports to the public. All the ESCOM councils, not one report has been released for a public for us to evaluate what they're saying. I don't see what value they're adding to the country. And I think there's enough other structures and civil society organizations that the presidency must be listening to as to how to get this economy going forward.
Okay, so I say that we may discount their relevance, but however, though, they are influential, clearly.
Yes, but they're influential in the wrong way,
Elgin.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, I've given you the Presidential Economic Advisory. The other ones for ESCOM, four or five of them, we can't evaluate them because they've never told us what they do.
Yeah.
So we can't. I'm looking at only the economic councils. Yeah.
Yes.
So the majority of them, I can't tell you what they do.
Okay, Mr. Vavi, your take on that, and for me, this is now around the composition of this economic council, because if, for instance, we speak about the presidential committee that is set up, those people may form part of the council, right? And we can see that they are quite influential. They have influence on the decisions that are announced by the president.
They have been carefully selected in order to tell the president what he wants to hear politically and at ideological level. Duma Gubule and other likes like him or other economists like him who think very differently from what the IMF, World Bank and the rating agencies would want us to do will never be invited. In fact, there were about 44 to 50 economists who during the peak of the COVID crisis wrote to the president to say, can you hear us? Because the road we are traveling in the country is taking us to more unemployment, poverty, inequality, and will not address the COVID crisis when you come to the levels at which poverty is going to increase.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a response, not acknowledged, nothing, no meeting. In fact, at some point, they had acknowledged that they will meet and then say there's a date. But when I suspect when they look at the list of these who these 50 economists are, they said, not a chance. Our president will not listen to these people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first problem. And here's the fundamental, which I think that we should just reflect on, Adrian and fellow panelists. And there are 8 of them in our view, and they go to the structural problem in the country. And here it is. Tell me one country that has succeeded to develop in the world when it has removed its protective tariffs that it would have needed to protect certain industries and to let other industries that it will never be competitive on let go. Which country in the world actually decided to remove tariffs even faster than required by the World Trade Organization? So that's why today we have no textile and clothing and footwear industry. That's why our steel industry is on its way.
Mm-hmm.
That's why our electronics and our appliances industries are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we are seeing deindustrialization.
Yep.
To the point that at some point in 1994, we had the manufacturing sector contributing 20% plus. Now today it's around 12%.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, which country in the world ever allowed all of its mines to be owned by foreign multinational corporations and to transfer vast resources to the former colonies as well as the new exploiters from China and mm-hmm. India? Thirdly, which country adopted a fiscal policy that saw a cut in its corporate taxes that at some point were 54% on the eve of 1994 and dropping them to 28% today, and then still have expectations that it will have resources to develop those that were colonized and oppressed during mm-hmm. apartheid?
Mm-hmm.
Number four, which country adopted a monetary policy that saw the removal of the exchange controls at a time it needed resources to develop the productive sectors of the economy? Number five, which country facing the same levels of poverty, unemployment, chose to introduce monetary policies with an obsession to the inflation rate target of between 3% and 6%, and only to maintain that through a high interest rate regime, leading to a situation where in our country, the people who do not invest in the productive sectors
yep.
of the economy actually make more money by getting their money into the banks and mm. get it to idle. And they earn between 3 and 4% because of the rates of our interest rates.
Yep. Okay.
Number six, just 3 more points. I'm sorry. Which country in the world have ever succeeded when a small minority of its former oppressors maintains a lion's share of land, even a quarter after a quarter of a century after the liberation? And which country in the world allows aggressive tax dodging schemes and illicit cash outflows that see the economy losing up to 400 billion rands every year, and then still say it can develop to address what is happening in Alexander and in Suecia? Which country allows outsourcing and or fraud estimated by the Treasury officials to be between 35% and 40% of its procurement budget, which is around a 250 to 300 billion rands? If the president doesn't speak to that, there's then the issue of our education, number nine. We can't compete with our neighboring country because our standards are lower. Our kids cannot read with an understanding. Even when they reach grade 4 and 5, they cannot understand mathematics. We are sitting with that. It's a structural problem.
Yeah.
No wonder the youth is roaming the streets. They have been failed by those that promise that they will liberate him. So the president have not spoken to a single of these points, Of course, he did mention illicit cash outflow in passing.
Yeah.
Where are the measures to address Steynhoff, those biggest looters, which are not spoken to in the mainstream media, whilst they are chasing small lizards that are appearing in the Zondo Commission?
Yeah.
That's the crisis in South Africa. We are refusing to do the hard things that will turn our situation around. We are so obsessed with this good grammar and packaging of the language, which means zero when it comes to the numbers of people trapped in poverty, unemployment, and inequalities.
Okay. So Mr. Manye, with all of those things that Mr. Vavi has outlined, shouldn't the question, I almost feel that what happens constantly in SA is when we have a debate around the economy, we have a debate around what was announced. So we'd say, these are the problems, But we don't have a conversation about who is in the ears of the president, who's in the ears of the Minister of Finance. And ordinarily, in politics, how does it work?
Yeah, look, that's a very good question. Because we are sitting here with a president that is busy managing the emotions of the masses, as it were. And I think Vavi put it very well to say he's a very good presenter. But some of us actually can see right through that flowery language. You can see, I think it's really, really, really a disappointment that a man of that stature just plays with words and all of that and just manages the emotions and doesn't get to the issues. To be managed like this is really bad. You look at, I can mention four things, for instance, just to show that South Africans are being played. You cannot talk about the economic redress and fundamentally getting to the next level without dealing with the issue of land, as an example. You have a current process in Parliament that is talking to the expropriation without compensation. Then President and his team, because that's the ruling party, they come up with a bill to deal with that. But in the bill, they changed the language. In Parliament, they were speaking about expropriation without compensation. In the bill that deals with that, they talk about expropriation with nil compensation. That is a fundamental departure. When you say expropriation with nil compensation, you are actually affirming the compensation mechanism, as it were, which is what we're trying to get rid of. That's the first thing. So this just shows that we've got the people here that are just not genuine. Secondly, on the issue of the triple PFA, which he keeps mentioning in the new, in his speech, that there's this public procurement bill will be fast-tracked. But that public procurement bill, which was supposed to repeal the triple PFA, is more of the same. In the triple PFA, there was a language of 90-10, 80-20, where the 90% of the points are given to the lowest price. In this new public procurement bill, they've changed that 90-10, 80-20 to value for money. You can see that there is absolutely no seriousness in this. The bill that Delil has just put through now on the land bill, everybody's excited and people are even confused. They think it's probably the continuation of the parliament process. No. The bill that Delil has just put through is an amendment of that 1975 Expropriation Act, and that bill is in line with the unamended constitution. That's what it is. So basically, we are now fast-tracking that Delil bill to continue to entrench the constitution, which amendments are going in parallel. So you can see that we are dealing here with a government that is not genuine with the people, with a dishonest administration. If you go to his 2018 speech, he talks about incentives and whatever for business. All that has changed now is the language. From incentives, we're now talking about stimulus packages. Same thing, playing with the people's minds. Lastly, on the issue of corruption, you would think that for an administration that has fashioned itself as a corruption-busting administration would be serious about this. And one of the things that should have been done is to deal with the issue of transfer pricing. We continue to have tax avoidance mechanisms that are allowed to siphon money out of the country through this transfer pricing mechanism, base erosion, profit shifting things. All of these things are just left unattended purely because it's white-collar crime. So until this government deals with white-collar crime and corruption at that level, for us as ATM, we cannot take it seriously. And lastly, before I lose time here, Adrian,
I need to go to the headlines. I need to go to the headlines, unfortunately. So we're going to go to the headlines, and then when we come back, Mr. Manyu, you'll conclude your point. And we're also taking your calls on 0861-987-000. Your tweet at Aldrin Simpia, hashtag PowerTalk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. I still maintain the question is, who's in the ears of the president? If we are able to answer those type of questions, I think it would lead us, I don't know, it would push us to a point where we get to understand where to intervene. And for me, this economic council that will be set up, the composition of that economic council is very important because of the influence that they hold. And because the economy is such a contested space as well. It's 2 minutes after 10:30.
Power Talk with Aldrin Sampier, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
Okay, so we're in conversation with Zwanele Manye, Head of Policy and Strategy at ATM. We also have Duma Kubule, economist and founder for the Center for Economic Development and Transformation. Zwelinzi Mavavi is also joining us, the General Secretary of SAFDU. Mr. Manye, just quickly, the point that you wanted to raise.
Yeah, just 2 points briefly. I just wanted to say that you cannot talk about corruption as your main theme, and yet there are still those still the bank statements that are there. And I think the important thing about this, and you see people say everyone must disclose, it's immaterial for the others. The materiality with this one is that you've got a president that is now running the country, who it is alleged that some of those people that have given money into those CR17 arrangements are now the beneficiaries of government tenders. So we need to be able to see that, if that is true or not true. And the more the president is hiding that, the more he actually increases the distrust between the people and his government. Lastly, I think it's important, Aldrin, that we don't deal with these things at a superficial level. Let's understand that South Africa, as we speak here and now, is actually still a colony of the British Empire. As long as we are still members of the Commonwealth, we cannot talk about sovereignty. So the kinds of ears that you're talking about, who is listening to the president, are actually the ears of our colonizers. It is in their interest for Ramaphosa to do what he's doing. You must check what happens in this country. Every year, January, all the economic cluster must run off to Davos to go and affirm to the Davos bosses there that nothing is actually going to change. Our economic policy is not going to change. But then they come back to South Africa, they say, we're going to do transformation, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. But every January, they have to go there to affirm that the neoliberal policies are firm and in place and nothing is going to happen, that you can still come and use South Africa as a place to pick up raw material and we're not about to beneficiate and all of that. I mean, way back, since when has this country been talking about industrializing and reindustrializing and all of that? And absolutely nothing is happening. This is because the people that you're asking about are not only just the locals here. South Africa is still a colony, and I'm saying that as long as we're still members of the Commonwealth, we are going nowhere in this country.
Okay. 0861-987-000. Your tweets at Aldrin Sampier, hashtag PowerTalk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. Shatadi, good morning.
Hi. I think the previous speaker just confirms what we are taught, that governments exist to uphold or continue the status quo, so not to work for its citizens. Anyway, so I don't know much about economics, but I think for as long as the presidency is nothing about growing the GDP of the country and creating an environment for black businesses to thrive, then he's speaking the truth, because, you know, you can't have or you can't be importing things that South Africans can do. Like, if you look in our households, almost everything is from China. Major stores are populated with exports. And that's why most black businesses struggle to exist, because you are competing with Chinese and American goods in your own country. And the president's focus is, like, he is focusing on just creating a country of employees and people who are dependent on grants. Mm. And that's unsustainable. But also it shows that we have a government that has no interest in growing the economy or emancipating its people economically.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for that. Phumlani, good morning.
How's it?
Good, good. Phumlani, how's it?
Great, thanks. I think we need to be careful not to take politicians too seriously, because the majority of politicians are sociopaths. So let's go back to Cyril. Cyril says he wants to bring in the private sector to work with government. The private sector was working with Brasa, was working with the post office. Takealot and Loot and all these companies, they had to move away from the post office because the cadres were stealing the consignments. And another problem with government is when there's a strike, you can have a two-day strike that will create a backlog for months. Imagine now you have a consignment sitting at Brasa. You need to run your business. They're on strike. And then after they finish that strike, maybe it's going to take a week or a couple of days, you get they have to deal with the backlog. Mm. So they need, the problems are structural. They cannot be fixed by creating decrees, you know what I'm saying? They need to work out the details. How are they going to sort out the incompetence in these institutions?
Okay. Mr. Vavi, your response to that?
So
Shatari was speaking there about, for instance, that the president doesn't speak about the GDP. So you don't speak about how do you grow this economy. You don't have the GDP target. And the point that was raised now by Phumlani as well is speaking about the private sector and how the private sector had already worked with government before. But then he makes an example of Takealot. And he says that, but then cadres were stealing consignments.
You pay a price when you take somebody who's a multi-billionaire to lead your country. Same like the Americans are paying a price over a long period of time where they draw all of their presidents from the multi-billionaire class. It's natural that the multi-billionaires will look at the interest of other multi-billionaires, full stop.
Mm.
And in South Africa, we are exactly experiencing that. And let's just look at that just to take that point further. There is no economic plan. This was not an economic plan that was presented. This was an infrastructure program which has been repeated over and over from Mandela, Mbeki, Mutante, Zuma, and now Ramaphosa. Nothing has changed. It is the rearranging of the words that have changed and the figures that have changed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There have been better figures in the past.
Mm-hmm.
The program that we're pursuing, which Jimmy is correctly called, sorry, Jimmy, I grew up with that man. This thing of running is so hard for me. The point that he is making is this, that we are in the middle of neoliberal economic programs, which by their nature, not by some accident, by their design, are meant to ensure that the state plays a back role in the economy and everything else is dominated by the private sector. And from what we're learning, even yesterday, City Press, the president is now gunning for Brasa. In the speech, the president is now saying 50% of our energy will be now provided by IPPs. Who are these IPPs? All of the big friends from Europe. The state is no longer going to be the guarantor of your energy supply, as it happened so successfully during even the apartheid and colonial era, under the so-called era of RET. That's what the ANC conference said they are about. We're going to be privatizing rail. We're going to be privatizing energy. Wait, schools are gone. There's a second tier education system. The other one is in private hands. The health system is a second tier. The other one is in private hands. Wait until they privatize your water and
yes,
then they will proceed to privatize your oxygen.
Yeah. Mr. Manye, any take for you?
Yeah, no. I think the points have been made, and I agree with the okay. with the caller.
Yeah. Do you want to affirm something?
No. Just to say, I agree with the caller that, and with what Vavir just said, that when we talk about the inclusive growth, we are actually including people into a mess.
Yeah.
We should talk about fundamentally restructuring
mm-hmm.
the whole system. But to keep including people into the system as they are making progress is a problem. And also the conflation of things, that when we talk about inclusion and transformation, and by transformation, we think that by putting a lot more black people into this thing, we're transforming. That's not transformation. Mm-hmm. What we're actually having is to have a new shop stewards that are going to defend the current neoliberal system. So yep. when we talk about transformation, we must talk about a fundamental departure from what is currently happening. So I have a problem with the understanding of the Ramaphosa administration about transformation, because they seem to think that the inclusion of black here and black here, that's transformation. Mm-hmm. That, unfortunately, is not transformation. Instead, what you have now, you've got black people that are now the securities of these companies. They are the first ones to tell you what is not going to happen and all of that, because they have to defend the mm-hmm. system that pays their salaries. This is the problem.
Yeah. So in all of this, though, where do we place the ANC, NEC, especially the NEC, that is, with what is being announced by the president? And I ask this also on the basis of there were some proposals that were made at one of the NEC meetings which were shot down, which weren't successful, but later on were resuscitated at NEDLAC, which also include family members of business, family members of leaders. This is now political leaders doing business with the state.
Let me make this point first, Adrian. You see, even when I was still in the ANC, I've always made this point that there is this confusion with comrades, where they say the ANC has got good policies, the problem is implementation. The problem is not that. The problem is that government has to go to work with government policies, not ANC policies. Mm-hmm. Until ANC has taken its policies through the processes in government and make ANC policies government policies, you can't hold the government to ransom because of what ANC policies are saying. This is the issue. So comrades need to understand that after you've resolved in NASREC or anywhere else, you must then take those resolutions and make sure that you take them through government processes, parliamentary processes, and all of that, so that they are government policies. Mm-hmm. That's the situation. And what we have in South Africa, we've got government policies that are fundamentally flawed. We've got government policies that are going nowhere near addressing the problems. And people keep saying the ANC policies are perfect, just implementation. We're going nowhere with that rhetoric.
Okay. Miesha, good morning.
Morning, Aldrin, and to your panelists there. Fantastic show. Let's stop chasing rabbits. Let's deal with the elephant in the room. Aldrin, I'm saying a guy who's got 7 rand in his account all of a sudden gets 20 million and the bank doesn't flag it. The enablers, the corruptors, the biggest one of them, no one talks about them.
Mm-hmm.
The guys who do business with the Guptas, all of a sudden they meet in the middle of the night. The following morning, when they are full of their money, they decide to flag their accounts. Let's talk about them. Vavi is talking about illicit funds. They don't go in briefcases, in trucks. Mm. They live through the banking system. Why are these guys not hauled? Because these are the biggest enablers, the biggest corruptors, the people who have facilitated malfeasance in this country. They somehow are able to sit at a private corner and nobody touches them. We have not forgotten. They met one night and decided to devalue our currency. We have not asked them, and we are very much aware that there are some most politicians that are given shareholding in this institution. We can talk whatever we want day and night. These are the biggest looters and the biggest guys who are doing malfeasance. Yeah. Let us address these guys before anybody else. And lastly, Murillo. Aldrin.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, let Vavi and Murillo give us the name of that Sangoma who gave them the concoction, how they beat COVID. Otherwise, we are sending the ICE, but they're calling the what? The SIU to them.
Sup. Abraham, good morning.
Hi, morning. How are you?
Good, man.
I'm fine. Okay. Aldrin, I want to know, how is this government, this government economic restructuring approach going to assist us as black entrepreneurs and innovators?
Mm-hmm.
because we have been neglected for 26 years of this democratic government. You know, they always, you know, come with very good and progressive, you know, ideas. But when coming to implementation, you know, we are still, you know, in a quagmire as black entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And I remember what, you know, Mr. Manyi said, you know, on Power FM, you know, just, you know, on one of his interviews, when he said that as a black person, you get very worried, you know, to find a black official, you know, in a government department, you know, than going to be assisted by a white person, you know. That problem is still occurring, you know, at this present time. I want to know until when, you know, are we going to be struggling as black people in this country?
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, then thank you so much for that. We'll get responses just after this and then we'll read some of your tweet.
Tweet Eldrin at Eldrin Sampier.
And a tweet here from Aubrey Mashiku says that at the moment, the Democratic Alliance and the ANC exist to promote and defend the interest of the establishment, including global and domestic elite economic interest. It is these interests which dictate the content of the economic policy. Our state is therefore an Induna state. Mr. Vavi?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just want to pick up 2 points that your listeners have eloquently raised. The first one about illicit cash outflows and building back on the point, you cannot take a lion to look after your sheep. It's not possible. If you look at the illicit cash outflows, the president himself was implicated not once in terms of being a person that would be found wanting. When he was in Lonmin, Lonmin shifted billions and billions of rands through illicit cash outflows and mispricing. When he was in Shanduka, Shanduka was accused of the same. When he was in the NTM, NTM was accused of the same.
Oh, actually, there was an article in the City Press that the Shanduka Education Trust went into a tender with the Free State Department of Education, which is irregular.
And so forth, and so forth, and so forth. The second point, the reason why the NEC is so cobbled is because I suspect every second person sitting there has business interest. You know why? The real capture of the state happened in the run-up to 1994, and post 1994 in this way. Capital made the ANC to disbelieve in the Freedom Charter's economic demands that the wealth of the country shall be shared amongst all, and that the mineral wealth beneath the soil shall be transferred to the ownership of the people, and that the land shall be transferred to the ownership of the people. And how they did that? They just gave the most prominent leaders the shares in the private companies, all of them, in the mining, in the manufacturing, everywhere. Before you know it, the former militant socialist was now talking about the market fundamentalism. Yes. And that's what has happened in South Africa. It's a real capture of the leadership.
Yeah.
So that's why the president, even when he says families must not do business with the state, the Secretary General says, tell me one business, one leader of the ANC that is rich, that have not made, conducted his business through the state. You know what he's referring to?
Yeah.
What we know, what Manyi was saying is in those files that are locked in the High Court, and what he knows is the activities of all of Bidvest and many others.
Yeah.
So that's why the president can't get that through the NEC. He goes to the NEDLAC, and in NEDLAC they make this very excellent statement that political office bearers should not do business with the state.
Okay.
I agree with fully. But ever be implemented in the context of the conflict of interest of the leadership? Never.
Okay. Mr. Manyi?
Yeah, no. I think I've made my point that
the confusion is to think that the ANC is in control of government, the ANC of the ANC. That's not the case, and people must disabuse themselves of that notion. Government is controlled by government policies. If people want anything done, they must engage with government policies. To be sitting here and looking at all kinds of resolutions, strictly speaking, is really a waste of time.
But why are the banks so untouchable, though? Just a quick one. Why are the banks so untouchable? Why are the banks untouchable?
No, the banks are untouchable because, well, the banks are running the economy of this country, and they are all linked to international treaties and all of that.
Okay.
So South Africa is not in isolation in terms of banking. There are all kinds of multilateral arrangements and whatever. Sometimes, to be quite honest, sometimes banks don't actually have a choice but to conform to all the international things that they have signed and all of that. What should have happened in that process is that if we had a conscious government, there should have been all kinds of local protections and all of that to make sure that there's not abuse of power. Because you can't have, for instance, at 1 minute that bank statements of so-and-so are a confidential matter, but when it's somebody else, bank statements of so-and-so are no longer confidential. That is a problem. There has to be a bit of consistency in all of this.
Okay.
You know, so FIC must come to the party. And my proposal is that I think when it gets to these kinds of tricky situations, there has to be, even if it's an in-camera hearing, where FIC discloses everything, where everybody is there that needs to know so that the matter can be resolved. But to keep things under a lid just takes away confidence in the system.
Okay. I just quickly want to ask you, Mr. Manyi, the front page article yesterday from Sunday World about liquidators saying that that you've hidden some of the multi-million rand worth of assets which ANN7 owned.
Yeah. Okay. You'll have to give me just 2 minutes on this one. Let me give you a chronology so that it's all clear once and for all. And you must record this. Date number one is around August, September 2017. This is when the vendor financing starts. And at that time when that vendor financing starts, government support to the ANN7 was on its decline. Everybody was resigning and leaving ANN7, as it were. So by the time I got in, I can tell you right now, I haven't even sent an invoice to any government that paid whilst I was in charge. So while the business was still run by the Guptas, government was supportive. But when Manyi got in, there was no government support. Let that be clear. Fast forward to 2018 January, MultiChoice makes an announcement that they're not going to renew the contract. That had a devaluing effect on the 450 vendor financing deal that I had. That helped me actually to go to the Guptas to say, guys, as you can see, that the business case has been scuppered by this announcement, and that helped to negotiate the price to almost nothing. So around April 2018, I settled the thing. So I don't owe Guptas as we sit here now, and I didn't owe them as way back as 2018.
How much did you pay them?
Yeah. Just let me just finish. Okay. We'll come back with the questions now. The whole thing was devalued and we agreed on a number. It's confidential, the number. But bottom line is that it was squared off. But as I did that, I then introduced new other shareholders in the business, as it were. So from 2018 April going forward, Guptas were no longer even part of this thing. It was me and other shareholders that are black South Africans, whose announcement is in the public. I did announce all of them in the public domain. And then towards the end of April, when I could see with the new regime what they were doing, purging and all of that, I came to a conclusion that this business was going nowhere. Firstly, because there was no government support. Secondly, because MultiChoice had pulled out. Thirdly, because the business was in the pocket of an administration which was not about to support me. So therefore, it was no point holding on to depreciating assets, because the assets that we have in the media space depreciate by the day. So there was no point in holding on. I then dumped the whole thing. I resigned as a shareholder. I resigned as a director. I ceded my shareholdership and all of that. I left the place there fully equipped with everything when I left around December. January 2019, going forward in 2019, I was no longer part of that. As to when the liquidators started and whatever, they were not dealing with me. I'm not a director there. I don't have a local standee to be responding right now or on businesses which I'm not part of.
Okay. So when you left other shareholders there. And as far as you're concerned, the equipment was still there.
Not as far as I'm concerned, the equipment was there. I know that for a fact because I left the place physically. The whole thing was fully kitted. It was all there. I left everything. It was there when I left.
Have you tried to find out from them what happened to the equipment?
No, I have no interest in finding out. Why?
Okay, because now the liquidators are saying that they want it from you. That's what the Sunday World is
saying. Oh, no, they haven't come to me, these liquidators. I just hear, and I did tell this journalist that I've never had any call from any liquidator or any letter and whatever. Usually when they go to court, they usually send a last threatening letter to say, if you don't do this, we will do this. I never even heard anything. I just heard this journalist calling, and I told him that I left everything there. I have nothing to do with that thing. So they keep dragging my name into it.
Okay, thank you so much, Mzwani Lemanyi there. That is the head of policy and strategy at ATM, and also Zwelinzi Mavavi, Secretary General SAFDU at Dumakubul. Unfortunately, we lost him. It's a minute after 11 o'clock, time for Power News.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.